All right.
Canonical correlation is either like doing a whole bunch of correlations at once, or a whole bunch of regressions at once, or two-factor analyses at once. Thinking about it as a data reduction exploratory technique, I want to make the distinction between two reasons that variables go together. In factor analysis, both principal component and common factor analysis, the reason variables go together is that they're correlated to each other. And the variables that are more correlated with each other load on the same factors, and variables that are less correlated with each other load on other factors. And you're saying to yourself, what the hell else could it be? You already know the other one. Think of multiple regression and linear discriminant function, which we'll get to later, and canonical. All of those variables that all relate to something else. So why does a variable load on a factor? Because it's related to the other variables that load on a factor. Why does a variable load on a multiple regression? Because it's related, like the others that load, to some other variable. You with me? In discriminant function, variables are going to load together because they all discriminate between groups. And in canonical correlation, variables load on a canonical factor or a canonical variate because they all relate to the other side of the equation. Okay? So, last week, we looked at factor analysis where we grab variables and say they belong together because they relate to each other more than others relate to them or they relate to others. Now we're entering back into the land of what are called dependent statistical models where there's an equal sign and something over here that we're trying to get to from these other variables. Canonical correlation is the most confusing of those for the reason that's shown up on this graph. Simple correlation, we got one y and one x. And what we're going to do is figure out the best weighting of this to mimic that. Easy stuff. Multiple regression, which you've been doing for so long that some of the things that are mysterious have sort of become commonplace. We're going to decide which variables we need and which variables we don't need to build ourselves a y prime that is as correlated to y as possible. Right? The variables that load on a multiple regression, that is, have significant regression weights, are variables that contribute to building that y prime. And variables that have a non-significant regression weight are variables that don't contribute to building that y prime. Right? What makes it simple is we can point at y. We start with y and say, let's go build us another one of them suckers. In canonical correlation, we loosen up a little. This is what makes it an exploratory analysis. What makes it a tremendous place to start with large data sets. We are going to take this set of variables and we are going to build a weighted combination of them, including some but not others. And we're going to do the same thing with the x variables. We're going to build a weighted combination of them, including some but not others. Now, this one was easy. We built a combination of some but not others to get us that. Here, we're going to build two combinations simultaneously with the goal that the combinations are maximally correlated. So variables load on this canonical because they relate to this canonical, for which the variables load because they relate to this. It is simultaneous. It is the first time we've seen simultaneous multivariaticity. I didn't make that up. But nobody's used it since the 30s. But I think it's cute. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to build a weighted combination of the y variables and a weighted combination of the x variables choosing those weightings to maximally correlate this thing with that thing. So we need one more word in our vocabulary. We're used to talking about variables, and variables are things that we measure. Variates are things that we build as a weighted combination of variables. Okay, so a Y prime is a variate because it's a weighted combination of the predictor variables. A factor or a principal component is a variate because it's a weighted combination of variables. So a canonical correlation is building two variates out of variables, weighting the variables so the variates are as correlated as possible.
Why two? What do you mean by two variates?
Because we have an X and a Y. Now, as you'll see soon, we can have more than one X and more than one Y. Because when we grab as much of this as we can that's as correlated as much of this as possible, there may be stuff left and it may be related. So, uses and alternatives of canonical correlation. Just because there are multiple criterion variables and multiple predictors doesn't mean that a canonical is the best analysis. If your research hypotheses or questions are about correlations between specific criterion variables and specific predictor variables, do correlations. If you want to compare correlations, use Hotellings or Rosenthal's, which is the same thing as Steiger's. So if you really know ahead of time that I want to know which of these is the better predictor of this, run the two correlations and compare them. That's going to answer your question. Remember, we're here because we're doing exploratory analyses because we've either exhausted or been disappointed or aren't able to generate our hypotheses. If your research hypotheses or questions are about differences between the best models to understand or predict specific criterion variables, build multiple regression models and compare them. But if you've got a bunch of variables on one side and a bunch of variables on the other, and you're not really sure what you're looking at, that's what canonical's for. It's one of the few variables that nobody has ever built a confirmatory version. But it is tremendous carving things up into chunks and trying to see how those chunks relate to each other. Now, it does require a little bit more of you than factor analysis. Because in factor analysis, you grab all the variables and throw them in. In a canonical, you got to sort them into two piles yet. Very often, one pile is criterion or outcome or dependent variables, and the other is some blending of IVs and covariates. It's a great way, if you're really stuck and you're in an area of research that you don't know, it's a great way of trying to figure out which covariates to include in ANCOVA models and multiple regressions. We had a thing where we had five training variables, five outcome variables, and 34 other things that they'd measured. So obviously I'm going to put my five criterion variables and my five measurement variables in, but which of the other things are likely to change the story? You dump them into a canonical, now it's five up against 39, and only four of those ever showed up as anything. Made my life simpler. Now I'm running nine variable models instead of 39 variable models. Better afternoon. So let's take a look at how the canonical correlation works. So we start with multiple Y and X variables. Remember, variables are what we measure. We are going to construct a canonical variate as a weighted combination of those Y variables. Simultaneously, we are going to build a canonical variate as a weighted combination of the X variables. And the canonical correlation is the correlation between that variate and that variate, which again were chosen with a weighting structure to maximize that correlation.
So B1, B2, B3 are the same for both?
Or no.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I probably should have labeled that somehow else. So I went with colors.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. First thing, the weights used to construct canonical variant 1 for y, canonical variant 1 for x, are chosen to produce the largest possible canonical correlation. This is different from a simple correlation where the weighting is chosen to mimic y prime. It's different from a multiple regression where the weighting is chosen to maximize the correlation. In canonical correlation, the weightings of the y variables and the x variables are chosen simultaneously to maximize the correlation between them. Second of all, there can be multiple canonicals. The max is the smaller of the number of criterion and the number of predictors. If you only got four variables, you've only got four pieces of information. Right? You can't have five. So if you have four of these and nine of those, the most number of canonicals you can have is four, because the most pieces of information possible is four. Yeah. Back to factor analysis. A complete principal components has the same number of components as variables and exhausts the variance. If you give me four variables, at most, there's four pieces of information. If there's any singularity among those, we're down to three. But the most you can possibly have is the number of pieces of information.
When you're talking about canonicals, they are the correlation between x and y, right?
The canonical correlation coefficient is the correlation between the y canonical variant and the x canonical variant.
All right. So let's assume that there are four y's, say 9x and 8z. So what will be max?
Four. Because you can only come up with four different kinds of things out of the Y. So even though you can come up with nine kinds of things out of the X, you're only allowed to use the best four. Because you've exhausted the variance on the Y side, even though there's still variance on the X side. Yeah, it doesn't quite seem fair.
So you can get four sets from B1, B2, B3, B4 for Y?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the best four sets for X, where the best four sets are defined as the ones that give you the most correspondence between one of those and one of the Y canonical variants. So canonical correlation is used instead of comparisons among simple or multivariate correlations when research questions are about how combinations of criterion variables are related to combinations of predictors. It really is a data reduction process, just like a factor analysis. I'm trying to figure out how many kinds and what are those kinds. Only now, it's related variables instead of associated variables. I have a set of interrelated criterion variables, say five measures of depression, and I want to know if they all share the same relationship with the predictors, what we'll call a concentrated structure. That once you put those five things together and you find what predictors they're correlated with, you've used up all the good information. If there's a second combination of the depression variables that's related to a second combination of the predictors, then you've got more information.
So two kinds of depression.
Yeah, now kinds of depression is related to kinds of predictors. That's called a diffuse structure. You have two sets of predictor variables and want to show that one set is most useful for understanding the one criterion variable and the other set is most useful for understanding a different set of criterion variables.
Yeah.
The first time I did a canonical, I was working with the guys who work on the deck, and at the time it was all guys. Now we have a mix. But the folks who worked on the deck of aircraft carriers. And we were evaluating the training procedures for them. And a new set of performance variables had come down from up above. So now instead of measuring their daily performance on six things, we were measuring it on, I think, 14. Now we had the same training variables where they went through training and there was a set of things measured in training. And those training things were nicely correlated and beautifully predictive of the performance things. Everything made sense. The training made sense. It was adequate. Training performance was highly correlated with performance. Performance increases in training performance begat, you know, it was sweet. Now all of a sudden we got 8 more criterion variables. And the question was, does the set of predictors that we have from training adequately cover all 14 of them the way it used to adequately cover the first 6? Make sense? Because when you run the 6 performance and the 6 training in there as a model, you got a really sweet model. Now we've got 14 on one side and only 6 on the other. And the question is, how many of those 14 are redundant enough that we are capturing them in training? And what are performance variables that we're not getting any information in training? We have to go change the training. Does that make sense? And we were able to find that of those 8 new ones, 5 of those we did a pretty nice job of covering up, but 3 of those were brand new, out of the box, had to not only change training, but had to change how we evaluated training so we could anticipate and improve performance on that. So we're in a world where some of these things were hypothesizable, but part of these things were brand new and there was really nothing to do but roll those dice and see what's related to what. Some of those 8 new variables slid into canonical functions that we already had. Others started whole new functions. Others were never included in any of those variants because they shared nothing interesting with the variables on the other side of the equation. Lets you know you got to go find some more predictors. So, we have significance tests to determine the number of canonical variates and how correlated they are. We then look at each canonical variate and see how much it is related to the set of variables. And then we look at what each canonical variate is, just like in factor analysis. We want to know, what is this thing? And what is it related to? One of the things that makes this more annoying than other statistics is when we talk about shared variance or how much a model accounts for variance, we've got 3 different kinds of shared variance, none of which have only one label, name, or symbol in the world. Sorry. There's the canonical R-squared. Same R-squared that you're used to, only with a subscript C. That means it's the squared canonical correlation. It's the variance shared between the corresponding X and Y canonical variants. So how much variance do these 2 things share? It's just shifting from a correlation to a variance shared, just by squaring. There is this thing called a PC, which is much like a principal component. It's the variance shared between a canonical variant and the set of variables from which it is constructed. In other words, when I have this X canonical variant, how much does this variant account for the variance in the variables? And that might vary dramatically. Because, go ahead. Yeah, probably several times. How much does this linear combination of those things account for the variance in those things? Now, if this is a weighted combination of one of them, and the rest all have weighted zeros, it's not going to account for much of their variance. But if they're strongly related to each other, then if they're all strongly related to each other, then they're either all or none related to the other set of variables. And so they're all going to tend to have a lot of weights. And so that aggregate is going to account for a lot of their variance. It's kind of like, do I have a general factor, or group factor, or a univocal factor? Make sense? It's the same thing. This aggregate, how well does it account for what's going on over there? All of it, a chunk of it, or hardly any of it? Yes.
So that's the values you get from the canonical form.
That's one of them. One of the sets you get, yeah. You'll see the printout. There's lots of printout. Then there's this thing called the redundancy coefficient. The redundancy coefficient says, how well does this canonical variant account for the other set of variables? So I put this as aggregate together. I have this performance aggregate. How well does the performance aggregate account for the training variance. And I'll draw you some pictures here. Okay? So let me just, those are the three things. Shared variance between the canonicals. How well does a canonical account for the variables that it is built from? How well does a canonical relate to the other variables? Here's the picture that I hope will help things make sense. So we've got variables y1, y2, and y3, x1, 2, 3, and 4. We are going to put together a canonical variant of the y variables that some weighted combination. We're going to put together a canonical variant from the x variables that some weighted combination. The correlation between these two canonical variants is the canonical R squared. That's the easy one. Okay? The second one, which ought to be pretty easy because it's just a principal component question, how well does this thing account for the variance in the variables it's built from? So if all four of these weights are large weights, then this thing is contributed to by all of them, and it will account for all of them. Does that make sense? If this thing is a weighted combination of 1 and 2, but not 3 and 4, then it's going to account for a lot of variance in 1 and 2, not much in 3 and 4, and this is going to be smaller. How are we doing? So we got the canonical correlation, which is new. We have this PC, which is not new.
John, I could understand x1 and x2 being not accounted for. But in terms of the magnitude, did you say that PC in the first case would be smaller and higher? So how?
If all four of them load, then the aggregate is account for more variance on average than if only two of them load.
But what does that mean in terms of
the Well, we're going to talk about that because that's where we have to be careful. That's where you can get some really bad advice about how to think about the next thing we're going to talk about, which is the redundancy coefficient. The redundancy coefficient asks, how well does this thing account for these things? So again, the canonical correlation is how well does this thing account for this thing? The PC is how well does this thing account for these things? The redundancy coefficient is how well does this thing account for these things over here. Now, it's easy to see why you would want a large redundancy coefficient. Because if you have a large redundancy coefficient, this one thing accounts for a lot of their variance. That's parsimony. That's discovering a meaningful pattern. There's a story to tell. The way that you get the redundancy coefficient, literally, is by taking the canonical variance times the PC variance. So if I want to know how well this accounts for variance there, I multiply this variance accounted for times this. So if these account for a lot of variance, but this is made up of just one of these, not all three of them, this redundancy coefficient is going to be low, not because it sucks, but because this is a specific factor. Does that make sense? Similarly, if this is a general factor that all three of these load, then being highly correlated with this is the same as being highly correlated with them. And the reason I bring that up is that my generation was taught that unless you had a redundancy coefficient of at least 0.25, your canonical analysis was crap. Don't even look at it. And that's dumb. Because the redundancy coefficient is the product of two things. How much variance is accounted for here and how much variance is accounted for there. This variance should be a substantial amount of variance accounted for. We're about to let things get complicated. We're going to start talking about aggregates and how they're related to each other. Give me some decent variance. But if the reason the redundancy coefficient is small is because even though this is highly related to that, this only represents some of the variables, I don't have a problem. If this is depression, and this is spelling, and this is math, I don't see a problem with three of these things being strongly related to depression. This PC is going to be low because it's 1 out of 3. This PC is going to be high because it's 3 out of 4. And these are going to be highly related because these three are related to that thing, and this exploratory analysis dumps it in my lap. So before you decide whether your redundancy coefficient is good news or if a low redundancy coefficient is bad news, you have to look at the structure of the canonical variance. Does that small redundancy coefficient make sense? Because one of the PCs is small. And that's what this slide tells you. So let's go look at an example. So what we have here is a correlation between two sets of variables. What we have here are four kinds of social support, and what we have here are depression, loneliness, and stress. This is what's known as a partitioned correlation matrix, showing us that we're really going to be working with three different correlation matrices. What are the correlations among the social support variables? What are the correlations among the clinical variables? And then what are the correlations between the social support and clinical variables? The idea here is that there's more information in these than in just this. I mean, if you look at this, you've got correlations that range from things that are less related to stress, more related to loneliness, with an intermediate relationship to depression. Might there be more to the story? And that's what exploratory multivariate analyses are for, is to give you a chance to look at some more complicated things. The way that we get canonical correlation in SPSS is by ruse and trickery. We're going to tell the model that we're going to run a MANOVA. The MANOVA code has the same logic as the GLM code. Dependent, bi-independent, with covariates. Both the dependents and the covariates being quantitative. If we leave out the bi, and we have only dependent variables with covariates, it gives us a canonical correlation. There used to be a canonical correlation, and IBM has said that there will be again. But for some reason, for the whole big thing, they got efficient. They wanted to blend it into the general linear model, and so there it is. The first thing that you get out of it is a multivariate test of significance. This is basically an omnibus test, and it tells you whether or not there's anything there. Next, you get what is referred to as the dimension reduction analysis, and this tests which canonical functions are and are not significant. This tells us that only the first one is significant, the second and the third are not. And we can only have three because we only have three variables on the clinical side. So here we're looking on the... This is the canonical. This over here is the... Oh, I'm sorry. I missed. Up here is the canonical correlation and the canonical correlation squared. You can see that whatever that first canonical is coming from the support variables, and whatever that canonical is coming from the clinical variables, they account for 41% of each other's variance. That's a big chunk of variance. We want to know what those things are. And this thing tells us that that first canonical is strongly contributed to by all four of the social supports, but that the clinical canonical variant is made up of just depression and loneliness. Stress is not part of the picture. The interesting thing here is that there's not a second variable. I'm sorry, there's not a second canonical that tells us what stress is related to, because depression and loneliness are strongly related to all four of the social support, that there's no social support left over to be orthogonal to this and related to that. So you just plain old ran out of stuff.
That would explain the very low squared correlation in the second group.
There's just nothing left.
Okay.
So, the PC tells us that among the social support variables, that aggregate accounts for about 77% of the variance. That lets you know there's not going to be anything left over. They all four load, they all four load heavy, they're accounting for about 76% of the variance. This tells us that the other canonical variance accounts for about 31% of their variance. It's a strong validity, or a strong coefficient, redundancy coefficient. On the other side, notice that the clinical variable canonical only accounts for about half of the variance in the clinical variables. And so the social support canonical variate doesn't do a great job of accounting for the clinical variance, because this doesn't account for as much variance as this does. The canonical correlation between the two is the same. The one canonical accounts for 77% of its own variance. The other only accounts for 46% of its own variance. And so these variables are going to account for more of those variables than these variables account for those. However, that low redundancy coefficient doesn't scare me away from the model, because we expected it. This canonical variate is only made up of two of the three variables. And it's mostly one. Remember, these are correlations. So almost all of this, but only about a third of that, and virtually none of this. And so, no, that canonical variate doesn't do a great job of accounting for these variables. Not nearly as much as this one. Almost all of it, 80%, 50%, 70%. There's a lot more being accounted for here than there. And so the redundancy coefficient going one way is going to be a lot less than the redundancy coefficient going the other way. Small redundancy coefficients rarely mean you have a bad analysis. They are usually just telling you that one or both of your canonical variates is not a strong general factor. Yes?
The second term, you're pointing at the correlation.
Yes. Yeah. So here's the picture. Notice, got to get it all up on the thing. Oh, don't be like that. Okay, hold on a second. It's not going to. Crap. I'm really not sure what to do. I guess the only number you can't see down here is the 0.41. So the correlation between the canonicals is 0.41, it's canonical squared. Notice that the dependent canonical accounts for 77% of the dependent variables. And so this accounts for more of that than this accounts for this, because this only accounted for 50% of its own variance. So this canonical looks good. This canonical looks lame. The reason isn't that it's lame. It's that this canonical only accounts for about half of the variance, whereas this canonical accounts for two-thirds of the variance. When you start multiplying decimals, numbers get close to zero really quick. I mean, something accounts for 20% of its variance, 25% of its variance, woof. Something else accounts for 25% of variance, woof. You product those, you're now looking at 6% of the variance. Yes.
So what this means is that even though the second covariate has only one high loading, like loneliness, but it's still the best possible combination which can, it is the best possible canonical correlation with the social support covariate.
Yeah.
So there's no other combination of depression, loneliness, and stress which can...
That would do better.
That would do better.
What this is really telling you is, if you want to understand, here, let me go back to it real quick. This is making me nuts. Go away. What this is really trying to tell you is that if you want to figure out what's related to stress, it ain't social support. Because when we use social support to gang up on these variables, we do great on loneliness, okay on depression. We haven't learned a damn thing about stress. So the takeaway message from here is, if you're looking at what social support tells you about, it tells you principally about loneliness, meaningfully about depression, but it's not telling you anything about stress. I would anticipate that this would lead to, if you conducted the study, this would lead to a finding that jacking up social support does not decrease stress. That it decreases loneliness dramatically, depression, some maybe meaningfully, but if you want to get after stress, you got to do something else than social support. Because this is a pretty complete set of social supports. The total social support covers much more than just this. These are just three other kinds that seem to augment that in detail. And we ain't getting squat for stress.
And if we were to throw out stress and recompute the whole thing, would depression get a stronger weight?
No.
Not necessarily.
No. What we would expect is that if we put this in as a single criterion into a multiple regression, we'd probably get weights that are all very similar. We're not entirely sure what would happen on depression, because part of this is being drugged by this being so big. And one thing about ordinary least squares is it can be seduced. I mean, ordinary least squares models are not trying to come up with the thing that's most correlated with an equal combination of these. It's what's most correlated with however it can combine these to get the biggest correlation. All right? So this doesn't mean that all four of these load equally on depression. You want to ask that question, run a multiple regression.
Exactly. With separate, like depression is the criterion and then separately loneliness.
Yeah, and run those parallel models, and then you know you can do your fit comparison, you can do your regression weight comparison, you can do all that cool stuff. But like I say, the big take-home message on canonicals is typically what isn't accounted for. In component or fact analysis, we put all of these in there together. And what we would expect if we stuff these into a factor analysis now from this is that our first factor is going to load on these three and this and probably that, but probably not that. And the second factor probably wouldn't be this with any of those. It's either going to be by itself or that second factor isn't going to pop. But one of the things that's always fun to do is you've taken your variables, you've split them into two chunks, you've thrown them into the canonical, you've told yourself a story, then back up and throw them all in together into a factor analysis and see if you get a different pairings of them. Because it's one thing to say that this goes more with this than these others when you're lining them up across from each other than it is to get a first factor that's these four and this. Just different. It's asking different questions. You sometimes get different answers. But remember, the whole idea is to have a set of tools where you can find something you weren't smart enough to think of. And this was a surprise, particularly this ordering. Because the usual model is that loneliness leads to stress that leads to depression. This model suggests that depression is a stressor. And depression is a stressor that isn't cleaned up by social support. For the social support will help the depression without helping the stress that's a consequence.
How did we get that?
When you set it up the other way, you would expect that this would be the most correlated, as it is, but that this would be the next most correlated. Because if you line it up, loneliness, stress, depression, then something that's related to the first step, but more related to the third step than the second, isn't expected, suggesting maybe those steps need to swap. Maybe the way we tell the story needs to change, which is a problem for structural equation modelings because they don't play with order. So you have to, it got interesting. But this led to a change in an understanding of what was related to stress. At the time, this was in the mid-80s, people were routinely conducting therapy on the premise that the way you minimize depression is by getting rid of loneliness and stress. And you could help both loneliness and stress with social support. It's not what this tells us. Now, it doesn't tell us with the clarity or aplomb of a structural equation model, but there's correlation patterns in here that don't make sense for certain path models. And again, it's unabashedly exploratory. The more you know about the content area and the variables, the cooler the stories you can tell when things pop out. It is just another tool in the arsenal. And that's what the homework assignment is like, where you just sort of tell this. So what you're going to do is you've got this nice little set of variables. Ought to look familiar. Say what? So you've got loneliness, depression, stress, and we've added trait anxiety. We've got social support, state anxiety, and some other variables. You stick it into the canonical, and you tell a story. Okay? It'll be fine. And then what you want to do is you want to take a look at some seemingly parallel regressions. So you're going to run multiple regression studies. And part of what I'm trying to do is convince you here that the multiple parallel regressions gets old quick and gets really hard because you're going to run four of them with loneliness, depression, stress, and trait anxiety as a dependent variable, one in each, and all those others. And what you're looking for is, what information do you get that's parallel? What information do you get that's new from the canonical? And then the other thing is, take all the variables and dump them together into a PC. Because remember, the way variables are put together onto things is different. Here we're putting variables together because they relate to each other. Here we're putting variables together because they relate to something else. This is giving you a very complete look, probably completer than you're interested in, at how these four variables relate to these eight. Canonical is the obvious thing to do. The PC says, what happens when we lump them all together? What story do we get about what's related to what? And then the parallel regression says, are we missing anything when we lump stuff together? Because remember, all of these multivariate techniques are working with the part of the variable that contributes to the model. Not the whole variable. Nothing's weighted one. But just the part of the variable that's related to the rest of it, to the model. And so sometimes the story you get about how these things are related to the part of loneliness that goes into a canonical with some of these others is different than what you get from a regression model with that as the sole criterion variable. Sometimes lumping things up causes you to miss things. Sometimes lumping things up causes you to see things that would otherwise be missed. But this is the most complete thing you can do with this kind of data. The canonical is obvious. The PC says, what have we missed about how variables relate to each other? The correlation or the regression say, what have we missed about the specificity of how things relate to each other? Don't do a bunch of follow-up analyses. Don't do a bunch of stuff. Just run the models and eyeball it. That's what I want, is I want you to get a feel for the exploratory process.